the Saturday morning, everybody. Welcome to this baby we call The Sweat here on DraftKings Network and VSiN, a program we bring you every Saturday and Sunday morning here, 8 to 10 Eastern Time. We are live and we are thriving today. I am Emerson Lotzia, your host for the next 2 hours. Steve Buchanan in the house. Sir, I want to shake your hand. How are you today?
I mean, I'm here. Julian's not. That's all you need.
What's going on with him? Now listen, he's going to pop in. He's going to pop in a little bit, but he's not here at the start of the show. He's hardly here every weekend. He's always sick. And now he's taking his family on vacation when he's sick, going to get his family and his lovely children sick.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
He's a selfish person.
He is.
He's only healthy when he's in Vegas.
Thank you.
I mean, that's all you need to know about the guy.
Exactly. You know what? You know what's sick? This show, baby. Here's what we got coming up. Masters class. We're going to preview round three today at Augusta. The weather's going to be perfect, people. Jeff Ulrich will join us live. We'll talk Tiger, biggest surprises, biggest disappointments, best bets today. Jackson's in action. Steve, all these young kids in Major League Baseball have the same name. Am I missing something here?
I mean, apparently that's what I should have named one of my kids.
For real. Instead, you went with Jake and Evan. Real
I was close. I was in the right letter.
Then UFC 300. It's finally here, people. We've been talking about it for years, to be honest with you, some of the hardcore UFC fans. And we got Dave Ross from VSiN to help you build a money-making betting card. But yeah, let's go ahead and let's start at Augusta National because, Steve, I'm not sure how dialed in you were to this the past 2 years here as we work up a sweat, ladies and gentlemen, the same way we start the show every weekend. The winds were howling. It was like hurricane.
Well, major delays, right?
We had a delay at the start on Thursday because of rain. Then the sunshine just started to pop through. But Mother Nature was just all over the place.
What was she doing?
What's that?
What was she doing?
She was blowing wind.
Now do that again? Okay.
Really bad. Patrons were chasing their hats like all over the place. And Tiger was chasing history. And Tiger Woods got it, people.
Birdied on the first hole, right?
He birdied the first hole too, which I believe was a prop you could have bet on the DK Sportsbook. I said on the show a month and a half ago when he pulled out of Riviera his tournament with the flu and had to get in the back of the ambulance. Everyone's like, oh my God, he's not going to play again until the Masters at Augusta. I said, doesn't matter. Bet him to make the cut then. I don't know if it was available. Said it last week on the show. Bet him to make the cut. Guys like Golic Sr., everyone else, always lost it. Can't do it. Just going to crap himself. Not strong enough to make his rounds around Augusta, the hilly hills of Augusta National. He made the cut. 24th consecutive cut made. That is history, people. And you know what? Tiger Woods, Tiger roars through Augusta National are epic. There's no better sound in the world, though. Then Tiger roars Augusta National on the weekends. And right now, he said yesterday, after his performance, I'm confident I can go out there and shoot a low number and get back in contention. What is he, like 7 strokes back right now? Wouldn't hate betting him for a top 10. Okay, maybe sprinkle a little something on there for Tiger Woods. But get juiced up because we're going to see Tiger making his way around the Masters. A couple bets I do like, Steve. Now listen. One of the storylines entering the Masters, 13 LIV golfers were in the field. You know, everyone says, oh, LIV, can't talk about LIV. Screw that. I'm talking about LIV. 8 of 13 LIV guys made the cut, okay? John Rahm, defending Masters champion, about 10, 11 strokes back right now. The scoring today and tomorrow are going to be low. Conditions will be ideal. Temperatures, mid-70s, 80s tomorrow, sunshine. Okay, sunshine and low wind. So John Rahm, who's kind of been backdooring these top 10s on LIV, about 10, 11 strokes back, is going to dial in today. Plus 700 for a top 10 for John Rahm. Okay, you do not want to give up on this guy as he's going to go low today and tomorrow. And unlike LIV, the man has two rounds now to make up instead of just one like he does on LIV. One of the best players in the world. He's not been playing his best golf here through two rounds. But look for Rahm to go on a few birdie runs when conditions ease up today and tomorrow. He's going to work his way back up the leaderboard. So don't panic. If he doesn't do it today, he's just got to finish the weekend top 10. Also, Cam Smith, another one of those LIV guys. 4 top 10 finishes over the last 5 years here at Augusta. He plays this course well. He's a horse for the course. I actually do like him. He's only five back right now. Hardly been on any TV coverage, but that's going to change today when he goes on a birdie fest. Top five plus 320 for Cam Smith. And if you just want to do top 10, plus 110 there. All right? Have high expectations for those two guys. Don't let me down. I've looked semi-smart on this show the past few
weeks. You know who the books are probably happy about not performing well? Brooks Koepka.
You're telling me, dude.
He was one of the most bet players to win it all.
And then you had Dustin Johnson there, too, because he set the record, scoring record win because of COVID. This was a fall event, and he missed the cut. And we'll talk about some of the biggest disappointments with Jeff at the Masters coming up in this show. Right now, you're warming up to something on the diamond, so talk to me.
Boy, I mean, this is something that we gotta discuss. It's April 13th, very, very early. But let me throw something your way, whoever's watching at home and getting their bets in early. What if the Houston Astros aren't good? What if this is the year that the Houston Astros take a step back?
Wait a minute. So this is the team that's made six or seven straight?
Oh, yeah. ALCS? That team. In Houston, Texas. That's right.
Wow.
Yeehaw land. What if this is a team that actually is about to take a step back this season? And you could say, well, it's April 13th. They'll come out of it. They're 4-11 to start already.
Last place.
Last place in the American League West. Can you believe that? In a division that has the Angels and the Athletics, the Houston Astros are in last place. And the problem is, and they're going through a tough stretch with injuries right now, this team does not have any pitching at all. You got Valdez with that elbow issue. You got Justin Verlander coming back. You got to rely upon a 41-year-old aging ace to be the stronghold of your rotation moving forward. That rotation, as of April 13th, has a 5.79 ERA. They're walking an average of five batters per nine innings, and they're striking out only seven per nine innings. That is not going to fly in this day and age of Major League Baseball. And they're not stranding runners. They're letting all these guys score that are on base. They have one of the lowest strand rates in baseball. They're only stranding 64% of the hitters that the starting rotation is putting on base right now. JP France, Hunter Brown, just getting demolished when they go on the field right now.
Who are these guys?
Who are these guys? Right,
exactly. What happened to them? Dude, they have changed.
Here, I'll tell you who they are.
Okay,
you know who they are? Not MLB caliber pitchers.
Oh, I thought you were going to say frauds.
No, I'm not saying frauds because they weren't never good to begin with.
Okay.
So how can you be a fraud if you were never good to begin with?
So fake players, fake contenders.
So I'm telling you right now, you know what I'm thinking?
What?
Astros miss the playoffs.
Whoa, because they still have the second best odds to win the division.
They certainly
Rangers
do.
Plus 145, Astros plus 165.
But you know what? Because when you think about even with the expanded wild card that we have, there's some good teams in the Central. We were banking on one team to come out of the Central, basically whoever wins that division.
So right now, this does not look like a team that's going to make it back to the ALCS. Now, that doesn't mean they can't go out and change things.
Sure.
Acquire players.
But you know what?
Dudes up.
When everybody was sitting on their ass and not signing a premier starter, when Jordan Montgomery was there, when Blake Snell was there, and this team did not go out and do that and get a frontline starter. They've never had a frontline starter.
That sounds like the team right down the road from us.
Well, that's a different story. But the Astros were coming into the season without a frontline starter. You could say Valdez was one of those guys, but you know what? They could have got Blake Snell. They couldn't got Jordan Montgomery. That would have changed the landscape of that rotation because then those guys can complement Justin Verlander. They can complement Valdez. I think the Astros might be taking a step back this year because I like the Royals. Royals playing hot right now. They win the division, and then the Guardians come through as a wild card team. You're going to get two teams from the East at least. All of a sudden, that wild card is looking mighty fine, thin.
Well, the AL West looks nothing in terms of odds like the NL West. The Dodgers minus 650 to win that division. Oh, Shohei last night with a big tater, a double. The guy continues to get it done on this super team. Diamondbacks next closest team there.
Yeah.
The reason I bring that up, though, is because news late last night, his ex-interpreter here, the former interpreter of Shohei Ohtani, Ipe Mizuhara, turned himself in to federal authorities Friday after allegedly stealing $16 million from the Dodgers star. So he made a federal court appearance on Friday afternoon in L.A. He was reportedly in shackles around his ankles that were later removed.
I don't think he's violent.
During
That's
the hearing.
Unnecessary.
I know. That does seem a little unnecessary here. So he did not enter a plea here, Steve, and was reportedly released on $25,000 bond.
So, who paid that?
I have no idea.
That's what I want to know. Who paid that bond?
I mean, hell, maybe the illegal bookie he was using in Southern California.
Oh my God.
Who made $40 million off of this guy. Now, I don't know if he pocketed all of that or not, but this is wild.
You know what kills me? Look at this picture. All the money this guy stole, he couldn't get a haircut. Look how awful his hair looks. You're telling me all that money he had, he couldn't get a haircut?
Buddy, he had the easiest cake job
on
planet Earth.
He really did.
And somehow, some way, he's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to screw it up. And the quote from him that we heard in this hearing, that he had texted that bookie.
Yeah.
Man, I'm not really good at this sports betting thing, huh? LOL. No, dude. Congratulations to all of you watching. You are not the worst sports bettor on the planet.
That's good.
That title goes to the ex-interpreter of Shohei Ohtani.
Yep, congratulations.
I still want to know what that $10 bet was that he made, by the way.
Yeah.
All right, coming up, Julian Edlow will slide into the analyst chair. We're going to look back at an NCAA tournament that was. How much he liked UConn's chances to add a three-peat next year? Yeah, it's way too early to talk college basketball futures, but we're doing it anyway.
Thanks for joining us, Jules.
Back here on Le Sweat, our beefy, boisterous, basketball-loving friend Julian Edlow is here. Big fan of the UConn Huskies, who just help make you some money. Congratulations there.
Thank you. Yeah. I have Dan Hurley has made me enough money over the last 2 years now that I no longer want him off the face of this planet for leaving the University of Rhode Island. So we can call it even now.
He's still one of the most hated men in college basketball.
I've always loved him because he was my coach for 6 years.
I understand that.
Years,
a lot of people hate him because he just wants to fight fans all the time, and he's a very
confident man.
I like it.
With fighting fans if you're my coach.
Yeah, sure.
And you leave me high and dry.
Absolutely. So he just led the Huskies to back-to-back titles here. First time we've seen that in nearly 2 decades in college basketball. What impressed you the most about UConn's run?
The dominance.
Unbelievable.
6-0 against the spread this year. 6-0 against the spread last year. All the wins by 14-plus this year. All the wins by 13-plus last year.
Huh.
They didn't let anyone get close. They left no doubt. And, you know, last year they didn't play a 1 or a 2 seed, and they won it all as a 4 seed. This year you see the path. 16, 9, 5, 3, 4. They beat some good teams in Illinois and Alabama, but they had not faced a 1 or a 2 seed. You get Purdue, number 2 in KenPom, the other, you know, best number 1 seed, the team that people thought could give UConn the most trouble, and you win by 15. Left no doubt that this was the best team this year, was the best team last year, and they're the best program moving forward.
Hell, I'm old enough to remember when UConn was plus 400 to start the tournament. You were a little nervous about their path ahead when the seeding was originally announced weeks ago. It's time for a sweat-filled flashback from our bracket breakdown special.
I don't like that UConn got that draw. If Auburn was in a lot of other regions, if they got Baylor's draw, if they were a 3 seed down there, I'd have them going to the Final Four to play UConn. But yeah, I think now the narrative has kind of shifted to look how tough the path is for UConn, and it's getting people almost off of the best team. I'll stick with the Huskies.
Well, congrats on being right, Julian. Why did this turn out to be so damn easy for him, though?
I mean, Auburn getting bounced by those nerds over at Yale.
Oh,
certainly.
There's no bigger Yale hater on the planet than this guy.
It's no,
some
I just, if you go to
Ivy
a school,
school.
No, yeah, if you go to an Ivy League school, I just.
Yeah, you
I
go get nearly physical, that dude probably went to Yale. Be careful.
Okay. Anyway, Auburn goes down in embarrassing fashion, opens up the path a little bit. I mentioned, like, Purdue's one of the teams people thought could beat UConn. Auburn was one of the very few teams people thought could beat UConn. They didn't get the chance. But the dominance, like, it was a short number on UConn, so people were scared to bet it. But when it seemed too obvious, it seemed too square. But then you look back and it's like, well, they're just the best team. You should have bet them, and you just keep betting them along the way.
People just saw in the flashback, there's a reason that you need to be dialed into this show 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock Eastern time every Saturday and Sunday morning on DK Network and VSIN. Were there any other pre-tournament takes that you're either right or maybe wrong on that you want to expose yourself on here? be a man?
I liked the path for Kentucky. I thought they had a great path.
Oh, yeah.
They don't even have a coach anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I had a handful of Kentucky futures that lost me a good deal of money. That was definitely the most glaring loss. UConn, I was the most right about, but they were the most easy to be right about. Nothing else too crazy, okay. I guess. It was another wild tournament where you can, you know, a lot of really good teams lose. And again, that just loops back to like the most impressive thing about UConn. They don't allow even a chance to get upset. Like they're never even on the ropes.
Well, right now they have a chance to three-peat, which is in the eyes of odds makers, which is something we haven't seen since the days of John Wooden and UCLA. So UConn and Duke, as we look ahead to next year already, folks, I know it just ended days ago, both the co-favorites at plus 1,000. Why are the Blue Devils getting this love?
Because they're getting a man by the name of Cooper Flagg, who is one of the best prospects in college hoops in a while. Obviously, Wembanyama didn't go to college. This is considered one of the top guys and a shoo-in to be the number one pick in a while. So they're going to have him. We'll see how that works out with the guys that they do wind up retaining. They're going to get some guys that go to the NBA. They already have some guys entering the portal. I can't bet anything right now. It's too hard. We don't like. There's going to be so much movement the way the portal is set up now. We really just don't know what things are going to look like. What I will say, UConn's come tumbling down. UConn, I think, was in the 18-1 range at one point, and then they win again.
Yeah.
Now they're a 10-1 co-favorite.
Are they expected to lose a lot of guys here?
Like, well, we got to see. I mean, if Klingon, this is an extremely weak NBA draft.
Yeah.
One of the weakest in years. If Klingon wants to go, you know, he can go and he'll be a much higher pick than he would be probably even if he stayed another year and improved just because of the strength of class. So what's more valuable to him in the NIL age? Does he want to go to the NBA or does he want to stick around as a local from Bristol, Connecticut and try and do the unheard of and three-peat? So it's going to depend what this team looks like. They're going to have to lose some pieces, but the way Hurley's building this thing out, I mean, UConn's going to get a ton of interest in the portal. Who wouldn't want to go to UConn after we saw Cam Spencer? He came there from Rutgers, how he looked. Tristan Newton came from Eastern Carolina. We saw how he looked, most outstanding player. Like, they're going to get dudes.
You've already mentioned there's really no one to build anything right now at Kentucky because John Calipari has decided to bolt for Arkansas. So here's how it moved the odds here. Arkansas now at plus 4,000. That is
three.
That's plus 3,000 now. Damn. Okay, that's down from plus 7,000.
Yep.
And then UK to what now from plus 1,600 originally? What are they now?
2,000.
Okay, so that stayed the same. Where do you see this move having the biggest betting impact here next season?
Well, the impact
is shaking anything up in the SEC too?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the impact has happened. 70-1 to 30-1 on Arkansas is the move. But guess what? If John Calipari does what he's been doing over the years, you're just going to have a good number on a 3 seed that loses to a 14 seed in the first round because that's what he's been doing. He's bringing a lot of his Kentucky guys with him.
And you were the guy who said on this show weeks ago, too, Jules, with the way that their season ended. You said it was time for him to end his era in Kentucky. But Kentucky said we're going to stick around. He's like, no, actually, I'm going to take off.
Yeah, it saved the program $33 million by saying, you know what? We're not going to fire you. All right, I quit. That saves you $33 million. So that's nice. They can use that to heave at their next coach as they try and throw piles of money at somebody. It's obviously a great job, but they needed rebuilding. Calipari just wasn't coaching well. He was just getting the talent and helping the talent reach the NBA and skipping the step where you actually try and win at Kentucky.
Yep. King of one and done, man.
It happened once. It was the Anthony Davis team. It was a loaded team. And now he's going to go try his luck at Arkansas, which is a great basketball school. Musselman built a really good program there. And they should do well in the SEC. They're going to be a scary team. But can Cal get them successful in the tournament? I don't know. The way he's been coaching, unless he kind of looks in the mirror and, you know, goes back to the coach that he was, he's not coaching well right now.
Yeah. You've already mentioned Klingon potentially going to the draft, maybe sticking around, aiming for that repeat. This is a weaker NBA class. So case in point here, like Bronny, LeBron's son, who was declared for the draft but has also decided to enter the transfer portal at the same time. Mm-hmm. So props are up on him. DK Sportsbook, over under 39.5 for draft position here. You can also bet on the team who could potentially select him. What's your early take on this kid's NBA future?
Well, so if I'm betting that, I would bet under, but I think that he goes in the top 39 picks because somebody's going to draft him to try and get his dad.
Yeah. So yeah. I've seen people mention the Knicks go out and try to grab him just because if you draft this kid, that is likely where LeBron is going to finish his career because he's been so vocal about wanting to play with us.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting conversation. Like, how high is too high to take Bronny James?
If you're going to reach for a year or two
of LeBron James, I would reach pretty high if you're one of these franchises that is just stuck in the middle of nowhere. Why not? Now, I think under 39.5 is going to void because I don't think Bronny's going to be in this draft. I think he's going to play at least another year of college basketball somewhere. He's looking at Ohio State, where LeBron has said he would have gone. He's looking at Oregon, where Nike headquarters is. And he's looking at, of course, Duquesne in the Atlantic 10. Because Drew Joyce, LeBron's high school teammate, just got the head coaching job at Duquesne. And maybe he can thrive there and be a star in the A-10, except for when he plays the Rhode Island Rams.
Yeah, or St. Bonaventure.
The Bonnies are just get out of my life.
Very quickly, you're going to draft Zach Edey. Would you rather draft Zach Edey over LeBron? I guess it depends on what your needs are, right?
No, I would draft Bronny because it comes with LeBron. Okay. I think Zach Edey is going to be a stiff at the next level with all due respect.
Really? You know what?
Taco Fall-esque, if you will.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Our Lord and Savior, the King of UCF, America's team, Taco Fall.
How's he doing these days?
Yeah, I think he's playing somewhere overseas. Whatever. Hang out because we need to dive into some NFL draft bets with you coming up in this show, Jules.
All right.
But coming up in 240 seconds here, people, Steve will return to the desk as we take a deep dive in today's MLB slate.
I want you to call your dad. Mm-hmm. I want you to talk to him, and I want you to thank him for all the times that he's allowed you to come into the clubhouse, mm-hmm. be on his pass list, you know, let you hit with the big boys. That's pretty special, and it plays into a lot of what you're about. The second thing I want you to tell him is that now it's time for him to ask permission to be on Jackson Holliday's pass list because you're going to the big leagues.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
That's all right. Awesome.
I'm fired up.
I appreciate it.
You've been exceptional down here, brother. Be 20 years old.
I appreciate
to handle
that.
All this stuff, dude.
That's awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Call your dad.
I will.
Hell yeah, brother. Hell yeah. Jackson Holliday getting the call up. I mean, the Orioles, Bukes, waited all but 10 games into the season to call up their top prospect. Look at the youngest players in Major League Baseball. What do they all have in common here, Steve?
Jackson 3.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Look at that. 20 years, 33 days. 20 years, 131 days. 20 years, 360 days. Their parents all having a really fun night together around the same time 21 years ago or so. Bukes, he's not immediately the betting favorite right now to win AL Rookie of the Year, talking Jackson Holliday. He's close, though. And that number could shorten if he starts hot.
We still got to start getting some hits. First.
Yeah. Right now, three games in, doesn't have his first hit. Did drive in his first career run against the Red Sox when he made his debut. Yeah, don't get us started there. But looking at AL and NL Rookie of the Year odds, I mean, like, none of these Jacksons are at the top of the board. But which one of them would you consider maybe betting right now to win this award?
Yeah, so I think that the National League is a little bit more open. I think the American League is pretty stacked when it comes to rookies. Like, you see the couple of guys up front there, two guys on the Rangers, Wyatt Langford and Evan Carter. But then the next two guys are Orioles because they just have this farm system that continues to pump out these prospects at a ridiculous rate with Jackson Holliday and Colton Cowser. So I think that I would go with Jackson Trio over in the National League because, like I mentioned, mentioned, the National League, it's pretty wide open here. Obviously, Yamamoto is in the front line here with the stuff that he's had. He's looked good in his the starts after South Korea, but after that, he's been looking fine here. But there really isn't anybody else to bet on between these two in the National League right now. So I think that trio over with the Brewers is the play to make for Rookie of the Year.
All right, so Orioles are going to be clashing here today with the Brewers.
Yes.
So maybe we see Holiday get his first hit today. What bet do you like when we're looking at this game right now on today's slate?
Yeah, I like the over on the game total here. It's currently set at 8.5. These have been two offenses that have been hitting very well as of late. These teams are combined 15-8 to the over on the season in the very early going so far. You got Dean Kremer going for the Orioles, who's been pitching a little bit over his head as of late. He's got a 2.19 ERA, which is nice, but you look at his expected ERA, which is really a metric you want to measure a pitcher's numbers at instead, and that's at 4.69. So we're talking about a 2.5 run difference from his on-the-surface ERA to his advanced ERA, and like I mentioned, the advanced ERA, the expected ERA is what you really want to be looking at here. So I think he's due for some regression here, especially against a good Brewers hitting team. And then this Orioles team, even despite getting kind of blown out last night, that team just does not die. And that offense is just so good here going up against DL Hall this afternoon. I think that's a good game to bet the over on.
All right. And one of the biggest storylines right now, too, Steve, around baseball, really a polarizing topic around Major League Baseball, has been pitching injuries here. And everybody on the planet seems to have a theory about why so many guys are going under the knife, why so many guys are heading to the IL. So the regular season isn't 2 weeks old, and already the number of battered elbows starting to add up. This list,
look at that list.
This list on your screen, we couldn't even fit all of the major pitchers on this thing.
It's like size 8 font.
Dude,
we're using.
It reads like a Cy Young ballot for an entire generation, packed with once promising stars who never fully returned to form and established names who will have to bounce back to remain in the upper echelon of the pitching department. So Shane Bieber is on that list, and he spoke to reporters about his arm injury this week and got pretty emotional about it.
Baseball will be there. I will be here. It's easy to keep things in perspective. Like I said, it's just an injury that I'll get past. And like I said, I'm not the first person, won't be the last. I think one of the things that is a bit more difficult for me is that throughout the offseason and in spring training, like, I did figure some things out, and my performance was getting back to the place that I knew I was capable of. And I was falling back in love with pitching. And I was having a lot of fun, and this group's great, and they're capable of so much, with or without me. I know I'll be a part of it, but just in a different capacity. So, you know, there's a lot of emotions that go into it, but that's one of them.
That's a broken man.
Dude, it sucks to see these guys who have poured their heart and soul into their profession, into becoming the best at what they do. So that hurts. And he wasn't the only one who was on the list we just showed you, who was very emotional when talking to reporters after going down. Real quick, before we talk Cy Young bets, what steps can MLB take to confront these pitching injuries here? Anything at all?
The other thing is, too, and I think it was Alex Wood who talked about this during the offseason. The training regimen for so many pitchers has changed over the course of the last, like, we'll say 5 years or so. And what he was saying was that, like, when the season ended, he was, like, done throwing till, like, December, maybe, potentially January. And that he also said, like, there were even some guys that a while ago wouldn't even, like, start throwing until spring training actually opened. So they would take the entire winter off. Now that's, like, unheard of.
Dude.
Guys just don't stop throwing. They don't stop working on their velocity. They don't stop working on, you know, getting a higher spin rate because of they're trying to overcompensate for all the new rules that Major League Baseball has implemented. And to be fair, I think that they are good rules. Like, I am not against them. But there obviously are consequences. And I think we're kind of watching those consequences play out right now. And then you have Dr. James Andrews saying that, like, the Tommy John ligament actually doesn't fully mature until you're about 26 years old. Have you seen some of these college kids these high school kids, they're already throwing like 90 miles an hour.
And Andrews mentioned, like, dude, the kids are throwing these crazy pitches.
Way too early.
Way too early.
So you got, let's say, 17, 18-year-old kid pumping out 90, and we're still 8 years away from, you know, that ligament, like, being where it should be. So, yeah, that's where these injuries are coming from. So it's like, it's not even just from the highest level. You almost got to start from the bottom up.
Yeah.
And take it from there. This is not like a major league problem. This is like a baseball as a whole problem.
And this has kind of opened up the Cy Young betting market in terms of...
If you have a Cy Young bet, I feel bad for you.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly do. Like, I am grateful that I didn't end up firing away on a Cy Young bet.
Yeah, because likely someone you would have sprinkled something
probably
on. Would be on the IL right now and potentially down for the
game. Here are the top five guys in the AL Cy Young conversation right now. Corbin Burns, Tarik Skubal, Cole Reagans, Luis Castillo, George Kirby. That is not what the landscape looked like 2 weeks ago. Not even close. Not even close.
What do you have to do? You just gotta wait.
You have to wait.
Mid-season?
You have to wait. And to be fair, like I've said this on the show before, it's silly to bet some of these awards preseason. Especially if you're taking like a favorite, because so much can change. If you feel strong about a long shot and you're putting like a little bet on something that's like a 30-1 or a 40-1, I have no problem with that. But if you're taking like an outright favorite in February or something, like it's just nonsense. Because like, who is the favorite in the American League? Gerrit Cole. How's that looking?
Yeah.
That ain't looking good at all. And of course, injuries can happen at any time. You know, oh, Steve, you can get injured at any time.
Yeah, it's true, dude.
Of course. But if you're taking like these big favorites, what? Why? If taking long shots early is fine. Betting the favorites early, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I don't like giving him credit, but Jules said here on The Sweat last week, he's like.
He was here last week?
Shockingly, he was. It was his first appearance in studio in 4 months. So he said he even waited last year to grab Snell for Cy Young winner, like mid-season or later in the year. Still got a good number on it.
I'm telling you right now, you can still get a good number on a player for Cy Young June, even early July, before things really start moving around. Wait till then. Wait till that plays out and see how that looks.
All right, so then in terms of, before we head to break here, favorite DFS play on today's slate, are you looking at a pitcher?
No, I do like Jose Altuve for the Astros, even though I just...
Wait a minute. Yeah, you just took a jump on the Astros to start the show.
I understand that. It doesn't mean that they still can't hit
some. That's true.
No, I didn't say anything about the offense.
He can still produce, and the team can still suck.
He is one of the bright spots, the small, lone bright spots on the Astros right now.
Short bright spot.
Yeah. Hitting 345 with a 450 over three home runs so far on the season. When you look at his numbers last year against lefties, he had a 367 Woba, 136 WRC+. Going up against Andrew Heaney, who has just faced the Astros last time out, one of the lone pitchers that's been getting beat up by the Astros at this point. Six runs on four hits, they're just 3 2/3 innings. Good matchup here for Jose Altuve at the top of that Astros lineup. Should be in a good spot here against Andrew Heaney, who has not been looking too strong in a
Rangers uniform. Good. A lot to look forward to on today's baseball slate. A lot to look forward to tonight when the sun goes down, if you know what I mean, because UFC 300 is here. The card we've been talking about for weeks, Steve, for months, hell, for years. Is set for later tonight. Dave Ross from VSiN is here to help you navigate all the bets available on the DK Sportsbook.
All right.
So after months of buildup here, it's finally here. UFC 300, meaty title fights, just a ridiculously stacked card featuring what? 12 current or former champions, Dave Ross of VSiN? Who's on the horn with us now, MMA handicapper. We were talking before we came live on air here. You are absolutely fired up for this fight, for this entire card tonight. Look at the smile on your face.
I can't get it off, Emerson. This is, by the way, seriously, and I know, you know, when you're in social media and on X, everybody's going to, well, maybe the main event doesn't have the star power of a Jon Jones, of a Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor. It's like this card from beginning to end, Emerson, is by far the best card the UFC has ever put together. When you start off the night on the early prelims with two former champions in Cody No Love Garbrandt against Davison Figueiredo, that's the first fight on the early prelims. You know this thing is just stacked top to bottom. Emerson, it's going to be a great night at UFC 300.
And the storylines galore here, really. So which one is the most compelling, whether it's a fight, whether it's, you know, a fighter with a storyline? I mean, go ahead, take your pick.
You know, I'll skip ahead because there are so many, as you mentioned, Emerson, that you could just say, well, this fight is going to be fight of night. No, this fight's going to be fight of night. I do look at in the non-title bouts. Remember, we have three title bouts on the card. If you count the BMF title, I can't tell you what the M stands for in the F, but I think we can all figure it out because we're adults. But besides that, it's DuBronx. It's Charles Oliveira against Armin Sarukian. And when you look at Sarukian, he feels like the next guy, right? And then DuBronx is kind of like, hey, don't forget about me. I am one of the most decorated champions we've ever seen at 155 pounds in a division, Emerson, that's been absolutely loaded with killers in the UFC for years. This isn't like a new thing. 155, you can make the argument, has been one of the greatest divisions the UFC's ever had. And Charles Oliveira is one of the greatest champions that division has ever seen. And now you can make him almost a $2 betting underdog against Sarukian. And I get it, because Armin's one of those guys that, look, we get the fight down to the ground. That's where Armin wants to live. And constant pressure on a guy like DuBronx. I think Charles is like, hey, man, if you don't get me out of there, and Armin might get him out of there early. If he doesn't, I've seen this happen in so many Charles Oliveira fights where you think he's down, he's out. He's either going to get submitted, he's going to get stopped. And he's still standing, and that bell rings, and the second round starts, and then Sarukian looks over and goes, why is this guy still here? It's because it's Charles Oliveira. It's arguably one of the best fighters we've ever seen at 155 pounds. I love the dog price here on DuBronx to show the young kids that the old man still got it,
yeah,
and he ain't going anywhere. I think there's good value there. Yes, Sarukian could win pretty much a three-round ugly wrestling match, controls Oliveira on the ground, but if he doesn't get him out of there, watch out. DuBronx, I think, is really live, and I love the storyline of Charles Oliveira as an underdog in a non-title fight.
Yeah, and how tense could that fight end up being, too, when you consider, well, unofficially, a match with lightweight champ Mr. Islam could be waiting in the wings, right?
Yeah, and again, I think that Charles would like to get back to that spot and say, I've earned it, I've got there. And look, Sarukian really could be. If he goes out and dominates a Charles Oliveira, I think that'd be a really intriguing fight against Islam Makhachev after UFC 300. So I think both guys kind of know what's on the table. And I love the way the UFC match makes, right? They're saying basically, this is the old guard in DuBronx, Charles Oliveira, against the new guard in Armin Sarukian. And if Sarukian is who we think he is, and by the way, he's legit. And I like the fact that he puts on the black hat too.
Yep.
He doesn't care. They're like the old Floyd Mayweather. I get it. DuBronx is the favorite. Everybody loves Charles, and they should, right? But I don't care about who you like. I care about winning the fight and moving on to the next step to my title escalation. And I think that's where Sarukian sees himself. And if he does go out and do just that, kind of like Ilya Topuria did when he got Alex Volkanovski out of there at 145 pounds, he doesn't care who the fan favorite is. He's just next. That could very well be. I'd be surprised if it's that easy for him. But that is the title ascent here. You beat the former, and you beat the guy that we all regarded as the best at 155 pounds before Islam Makhachev, and then that would be the next fight, Armin Sarukian against Islam. But to me, I think DuBronx has got his one last say to say not so fast yet in this division. The hierarchy has not changed just yet.
What's the bet then between Bo Nickel and that glorious cauliflower ear? He's a heavy, heavy favorite here against Cody Brundage, dude. These are two former collegiate wrestlers, right?
Well, here's the problem, Emerson. If I know that Bo Nickel is the best wrestler out there that the UFC arguably has to offer, and that's what Cody Brundage does too. And look, no disrespect to Cody Brundage, because this is a guy he's a good UFC fighter. Is he a championship level fighter? I don't think so. So I think, again, the UFC in kind of wrestling parlance, this is a get-over fight. Why is Bo Nickel on the main card at UFC 300 where all the eyeballs are going to be on the MMA world in Las Vegas that night? It's to see everybody on that card, all those star-studded fighters, and Bo Nickel. So Bo Nickel is going to have the spotlight on him. Can he handle it? Look, we've seen other fighters that couldn't. I can go back to, say, a Sage Northcutt, who the UFC really wanted to put over as kind of the next young gun. He wasn't ready for it. I think Bo Nickel is. So the problem for Brundage as a co-wrestler is, do I really want to go down to the ground with this guy? You would think Cody'd want to keep the fight standing and see if he can land a clean shot and hurt Bo Nickel. Good luck with that. Look, there's no way I'm laying the big price tag here with Bo Nickel. I'm not going to put him in as parlay fodder. To me, there's just not enough value there. I think, Emerson, where you can find the value is Bo Nickel via sub.
Okay.
You can find that about minus $1.25. You're giving me a massive favorite and chopping that all the way down to almost even money, just laying a quarter here at $1.25. That's the way to play it for me. And you got 15 minutes to work. I don't think he's going to need all 15 minutes. And I think if he doesn't like the hands game with Brundage, then fine. Let's go down to the mat, wrestler to wrestler, and see who's got the finishing chops at the ground. And I think that's where Bo Nickel lives. I think that's where he thrives. I don't think the moment and the spotlight will be too big for him. I like to shorten that price tag by playing it via sub. Give me that at minus $1.25.
What's the move on the DK Sportsbook, Dan, for Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway here? This was a fight. There was confusion as to whether this fight was even happening or not.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, here's the thing. I love Maxie. Maxie, baby, right? He's from the Ninth Island, Hawaii. Just tough guy, right, Emerson? He just wants to fight. He doesn't really care. And guess what? He's got a match in Justin Gaethje, right, from Colorado, training in the altitude there and never tires. These guys have cardio for days. And this is why, again, this is for the BMF title, right? And so, again, I can't say exactly what it stands for, but you can figure it out at home. So potentially five rounds. So to me, I go, well, why would Max Holloway take this fight? Why wouldn't he go back to his home where he was one of the greatest champions at 145 and say, okay, yeah, I'll go back and fight now against Ilya Topuria. He could still do that. But in the interim, I think he's going to get a great shot here at 155 pounds against a guy that's a willing striker. So to me, I love Max at basically solid plus money, because how is this fight going to play out? Gaethje's not going to wrestle. He could if he wants to. He never does. And guess what? It's the reason why they call him the highlight. This is a decorated college wrestler in Justin Gaethje who never wrestles. Why? Because fans don't want to see grappling all the time. They're not here to see Roman Greco wrestling. They want to see these guys stand and bang with the hands. That's what you're going to see. And who bangs better than Max Holloway standing? Nobody. So give me Maxie. I think this one's got a good chance to hit the cards as well. But I love Holloway at plus money here. And then if he wants to stay at 55, great. But if not, probably move back down to 145 and get another title shot back in his rightful division.
All right. Bring us home, Alex Pereira and Jamahal Hill. Let's go. The last of three title bouts atop the card. Take it away.
Okay, here's the deal. I have so much respect for Jamahal Hill. Why? Because he blew out his leg. And you know what he said? I'm not going to hold up the division as a champ. Go ahead, UFC, take my belt. And when I'm healthy, give me a title shot to get my belt back. UFC said, you got a deal. And now here we are a year later. Jamahal Hill's back in there against a killer in Poatan at 205 pounds. Here's the problem, though, for Jamahal Hill coming off this long, lengthy layoff. Is we know Alex Pereira for the left hook. We know him for the hands. Comes in kind of hands down. Let's go ahead and brawl. Don't forget about those leg kicks, Emerson. And I think with a guy like Jamahal Hill, who's got small legs, coming off a bad leg injury for your first fight back to be against Alex Pereira, those leg kicks come and all of a sudden you don't have a base and then the left hooks come. To me, Alex Pereira, small money price that you're laying with Poatan here. A lot of respect for Jamahal Hill to take this fight. And I don't even know if he was ready to take this fight at UFC 300. That tells me a lot to where his head is. Like, oh, really? You want me to be the main event at UFC 300? Cool. I'll do it. Don't know if I'm ready. Give me Alex Pereira.
Woo!
Fire that bow and arrow.
Look at that.
Get the W in the main event.
This is the energy we need on this glorious Saturday morning. Dave Ross, you're the man. We'll be keeping an eye on you and all of your friends on VSiN later tonight. Hopefully everyone sets up two TVs watching the fight and then watching you on the other one. Everyone, stick with us here after the break. We got NFL draft bets with Julian coming up. Which wide receiver could have a shot at dethroning Marvin Harrison Jr.?